Before I let this clip roll, I just want to tell you that it is rated PG-13. There are a couple words in here that typically are not heard in church, but it's just part of the video, and I'm hoping not to offend anybody.
Well, I was just wondering, because I couldn't figure out why you would throw home when we've got a 2-run lead. You let the tying run get on second, and we lost the lead because of you. Now you start using your head. That's that love that's 3 feet above your ass. Are you crying?
No.
Are you crying? Are you crying? There's no crying. There's no crying in baseball.
Why don't you leave her alone, Jimmy?
Oh, you zip it, Doris. Rogers Hornsby was my manager, and he called me a talking pile of pig shit. And that was when my parents drove all the way down from Michigan to see me play the game. And did I cry?
No.
No. No. And you know why?
No.
Because there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in baseball. No crying.
What's the matter, Jimmy?
What? She's crying, sir.
I didn't mean to do that.
Perhaps you chastise her too vehemently. Good rule of thumb. Treat each of these girls as you would treat your mother.
You want to ever tell you look like a penis with a little hat on?
You're out of here!
Oh, no,
right
no,
now,
no,
Jimmy,
you,
I heard
you
that!
You misunderstood.
You misunderstood me!
No,
you can't throw me out for that! No,
Jimmy.
You've got to strike
right
off!
Now.
Well, I want to start off by sharing with you that in preparation for the talk today, I looked at and reviewed literally dozens of video clips. And all of them dealt with crying in one form or another. And most of them were downers. I reviewed a clip of a dog that really looked like it was shedding tears after its owner dropped it off at a shelter because he no longer wanted the dog. And another one was a cat that was really appeared to be crying when she lost her kittens. A baby elephant crying when it stumbled and fell into a pit. And even a koala bear that was just wailing away after it had been kicked out of its own tree by another bear. I didn't go with any of those things because, well, I'm hoping that the talk is a little bit uplifting and inspirational and not to bring you down so much. But really, I chose that clip from the motion picture A League of Its Own because I really think that it illustrates a point that I want to talk about this morning. And again, I really hope nobody was offended by a couple of the words in that clip. There's no crying in baseball. I want to say it again. There is no crying in baseball. But you know what? You could take that word baseball and remove it and put in its place just about any word that you want. Because the truth of the matter is, in the world in which we live, it's not the venue that it is upsetting or uncomfortable. It's the act of crying itself. We don't like it. When somebody's crying, it really makes us uncomfortable. So you might just as easily say, there's no crying in high school or any school for that matter. There's no crying on the playground. There's no crying in relationships. There's no crying in war. There's no crying in politics. Many years ago, presidential nominee Ed Muskie was brutally ridiculed for supposedly having shed a couple of tears at a campaign rally. And even in families, very often, no crying is the rule. And it's particularly true if you are a boy growing up in America, or if you were a boy growing up in America, you learn that boys, and especially men, just ain't supposed to cry. Crying makes us uncomfortable. We've all seen it. We've all experienced it. A child cries, and we do everything we can to make them stop. We try to distract them. We offer them candy or maybe ice cream. And sometimes we make weird, funny faces or do something comical to try to turn those tears into laughter. And sometimes we even resort to threats. If you don't stop crying, you're not going to have any dessert tonight. And even if you don't stop crying, I'm going to come over there and give you something to really cry about. I have even seen my own mom try to use guilt to turn off the tears. If you don't stop crying, you're going to make mama cry. Do you want to make mama cry? And everything I have just said is magnified 1,000-fold when it comes to an adult that is shedding tears. My father never cried, never ever cried, except with one exception. I recall it clearly, so vividly. There was no one thing that set it off. One evening, he just started to cry. And I said, as I said, it wasn't one thing. It was everything. Life just piled up, and sometimes, you know, it just things like things never end. And that night, it was like a dam had burst, and he just sobbed for an hour. And everyone in the house took turns trying to make him stop. I remember my mother telling him, "Okay, Luke, that's enough now." We all wanted him to stop, but nobody dared to ask that question. "Dad, why are you crying? What's wrong?" I think we were too afraid to find out. We just wanted it to stop so we could go back to pretending that everything was hunky-dory. My father did not even get any hugs out of the deal. The closest thing to empathy that was expressed were the words, "Don't cry, Dad." No pain, no hurt, no sadness was acknowledged. Even if Dad was hurting, we just wanted him to show up as strong again. And I truly believe it wasn't his feelings that we feared so much as it was our own. I believe that when we try to get someone to quit crying, we really are trying to get them to quit feeling, or to put their feelings away somewhere, put them back in storage, put them in the crawl space on the shelf or wherever you know, is your favorite place to keep them tucked away. Get them back into the bottle and, for God's sake, put a cork in it. I believe when we hold back our own tears, when we stifle our own tears as things well up within us, we are just trying to quash our own feelings. It's like we live on the planet Vulcan from Star Trek, where emotions are not only bad, they are taboo. Just keep the heart out of it. And for the longest time, I thought my best feature was my intellect, my brain. And then one day I realized where the voice was coming from that was telling me this. In Unity, we talk a lot about the 12 powers. The 12 powers are magnificent. They provide us such valuable guideposts as we continue on our spiritual journey. And they were put together by our co-founder, Charles Filmer, who I'm totally convinced was an absolute intellectual genius. And there had to be 12 powers because they had to correspond with the 12 apostles, just like in the Christian scriptures, there had to be 12 apostles to correspond with the 12 tribes of Israel. And the reason that this is important, in both cases, that number 12 was the tradition upon which a new consciousness was to be built. And while I love the 12 powers and I respect them, I really think that maybe there was a very important power that got omitted. And that is the power of vulnerability. Our real selves, who we really are, lie much more in our emotions and our feelings than in our intellect. This is why our own brains work so hard to keep our feelings at bay. That is, of course, with the exception of the feeling of fear, because that's used as a tool to suppress the true wonders of being alive, including the occasional wonder of sadness. The world looks at vulnerability as a weakness. But as Brené Brown writes, to believe that vulnerability is a weakness is to believe that feeling is a weakness. What you feel is not a weakness. What you feel is a reflection of your soul. What you feel is a representation of the unique magnificence that you are. When I was at seminary in a counseling class, we were emphatically told, do not ever, ever tell someone, do not feel that way, or you shouldn't feel that way. People feel what they feel. And what they feel is an expression of who they are. To tell somebody not to feel the way they feel is to tell them to stop being who they are. When we tell somebody not to cry, we are telling them to deny their feelings. We are telling them to deny themselves. We are telling them, don't be who you are. And here I am giving this talk today, right? And just yesterday, Susan shared with me that a friend of ours was really upset because her dog had to be taken to the vet for emergency treatment. And the woman expressed that if something happened to the pet, she shared that she thought she would have no reason to live, no purpose in life. And well, as I said, here I am giving this talk to you today. And my immediate reaction that came to me when this was shared to me, what came into my head was, she could just get another dog. My brain was so quick to provide a solution for her pain. And as a result, I was really being insensitive, dismissive of her feelings. Crying, whether a manifestation of sorrow or joy, profoundly tells the story, not the way your brain tells it, but rather how your heart lives it. Tells the story of your life. There are many references, many examples in the scriptures. The poetry of the Psalms talk about crying. Abraham cried as he mourned the death of his wife Sarah, and David cried over the death of his infant son. Our way shower Jesus, before raising Lazarus back to life, was moved by the sadness and mourning that was pouring out from Lazarus's loved ones. And this story comes from us, from the Gospel of John. And what's really significant about that is the Gospel of John is all about proclaiming that Jesus is the Messiah, that he's the real deal, that Jesus is the cosmic Christ. So when in that Gospel of John, we are given two simple words. These words more than any of the miracles that Jesus performed, in my opinion, demonstrated his Christhood. And those two simple words in chapter 11 simply were, Jesus wept. Think about it. For centuries, the divinity of Jesus was proclaimed by the church, so much so that it created distance between him and us lowly sinners. He was placed on a throne way above and way beyond our reach. But those two simple words, Jesus wept, belies all of that. Those two simple words tell us that our way-shower sometimes was sad. And therefore, for us to feel sad from time to time is okay. In fact, it is more than okay. Those two words tell us that Jesus had feelings, that he was alive in a way that each and every one of us can relate to. Those two words confirm the oneness that we share with him and the communion that we share with one another. Those two words bear witness that our weakness really is our strength, the place from which miracles take place. And those two words affirm that the Christ light that burns in our hearts can shine as brightly as we ourselves dare to make it happen. Being in touch with your feelings and manifesting them is perfectly normal. Nature and the animal world regularly show this. Last year, we discovered a skunk and seven of her babies in one of our window wells at our house. And the wildlife person who came out said for sure that that skunk did not give birth in that window well, but fell into it and couldn't get out. And so she cried out to her babies, who came out from under our front stoop, and jumped into the well to be with her. And there's all kinds of scientific documentation that animals show their feelings, including just finding a way to display it when they're sad or depressed. We've all been around long enough to know that life can be very uncertain. Skunks fall in window wells. Earthquakes and tsunamis happen. A virus comes along, a pandemic, and kills over 200,000 people in our country in just 6 months. We lose our jobs. Accidents happen. Bones break. Car accidents take place. People trip. People fall. And when these unfortunate things happen to us or to our loved ones, yes, in unity, we affirm that how we respond to these things is up to us. It's a decision that we get to make, and we do not have to claim victimhood. We do not have to remain victims. But it does not mean that being sad or shedding tears is unnatural or unhealthy. Grieving is healthy because it allows us to take that energy that was attached to who or what was lost and bless it and then dispel it. That allows us to move in a direction of reinvesting that energy in a new, meaningful, powerful way. Keeping it bottled up and unexpressed, on the other hand, can be really paralyzing. Vulnerability is not the birthplace of our spirituality, but it is the birthplace of the manifestation of our spiritual being in the world, in our relationships, our jobs, and in our families. When I was a young teenager, a little two-year-old boy wandered into the street and was struck by a car. He really was in very bad shape. And the church rectory was about a half a block away, and somebody ran over to get the priest who came to administer last rites. That young priest who had just been ordained a few months before that was so moved at the sight of this young, suffering little boy that he just openly, visibly sobbed and barely could perform the ritual of healing. But it didn't matter. That day, that priest blessed that little boy through his vulnerability, his compassion, his caring, his love, and his tears. And from that day on, I knew I could always trust that priest. So much of what goes on in the world, so much of what comes at us in the news, so much of what we experience at our jobs numbs us. So much of television's content these days desensitizes us toward pain and suffering and death. And since the pandemic started in this country in March, I know literally dozens of people that have just stopped watching the news because they've just concluded it is something that is unhealthy. And I get this. And I also understand that if when we were growing up, we were ridiculed and maybe even scorned for showing our feelings, for daring to be vulnerable, we would go to that place of trying to condition ourselves not to show those feelings and not to share our fears, and absolutely don't shed any tears. But as sad as this is, it doesn't stop there. If we cannot feel, if we don't allow ourselves to feel, we can't be kind. We can't be caring. And we cannot be loving. If we cannot feel, we can only be empty. I want to share with you a quote from a lady by the name of Madeleine Vinglet, who once wrote, "When we were children, we used to think that when we were grown up, we would no longer be vulnerable. But to grow up is to accept vulnerability. To be alive is to be vulnerable." And I would add to that quote, if we are not vulnerable, we cannot truly be alive. All of the things that we in Unity lay claim to as part of our spiritual heritage as divine, beloved children of God, they're only possible only to the extent that we allow ourselves to be vulnerable. They're there. They're always there. But to share in them, we can do so only when we embrace our feelings instead of keeping them on a shelf someplace. All that wonderful good stuff that we talk about, that we write daily words about in Unity: abundance, prosperity, hope, faith, genuineness, responsibility, compassion, joy, strength, courage, love. Yes, especially love. All of these can be known if we are willing to live from our hearts. We all know that love is risky. We also know it can't happen without putting ourselves out there and being all in. And we probably all have had enough life experiences that we know that when we've tried this, what we got in return was a good stiff kick in the stomach. But there is no other way. I'm not asking you to go around all the time literally sharing tears in response to everything everywhere you go. This morning, very simply, I'm just asking you, give yourself permission to feel. And more directly, I'm asking you to take instructions more from your heart and less from your head. And whatever it is that you're feeling, it's okay to share it. It's okay to express it. You came into this world with inherent characteristics, inherent abilities to do things like smile and to dance and to laugh and, yes, to shed tears of both joy and sorrow. These are not liabilities. These are signs that you're alive. These, along with the feelings that had given birth to them, these characteristics, along with the feelings that gave birth to them, reveal your beautiful humanity, your soul, your inner Christ. And so the next time that you feel that the emotions pent up, those emotions that cause tears to well up in your eyes, recognize it for what it is, a powerful expression of prayer. There are so many things about all of us, there are so many things about all of you that make you so incredibly beautiful. Your humanness, your sainthood comes from your ability to just be a part of and share in the oneness, not just on an intellectual level, but on a level of feeling, on a level that is actually mystical and magical in such a way. To put any of that on aside and say it's not appropriate, or I have to show strength, isn't showing strength at all. Your real strength knows, or rather comes from, who you are in your depths. And so, to shed a tear here and there is a good thing. It's a healthy thing. It's a human thing. And it's a very, very divine gift.